It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Access of Easy podcast. This is number 388, the latest and greatest data breaching, overreaching. My name is Joey. That's Len, buddy. What's going on? You just said you're not watching the hockey game tonight. Extremely frustrating. What kind of answer is that?
You laugh, Joey. I was watching a hockey game not too long, like literally 15 minutes ago, but it was the Leafs and Devils, 1989 October. What a game that was. So, yes, goalies got into the fight. It was a wonderful match. So, yeah, I was watching hockey just when hockey was hockey. So, yeah, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. We just had some mic trouble here before the show started, so I hope this sounds okay. If it doesn't, well, there's nothing I can do about it now since we're tight for time.
Let's get right into it. The last from that game that I was talking about, and people could be occupied by watching.
My part will just be replaced by 8-bit graphics and 8-bit sound. That's it.
No, this is like from TSN. This is this wasn't NES ice hockey or Blades of Steel.
We need NHL 94 highlights to make this.
I got hundreds of hours. Hundreds. You have no idea.
Last week's quote was, my experience is that average scientists will tell you what they know. Extraordinary scientists tell you what they don't know. That was from Perry Marshall. Tons of guesses, but nobody got it. This week's quote, as a well-spent day brings happy sleep, so a life well-spent brings happy death. Interesting. If you know who that was from. No searching, obviously. Put it in the comments. You get your next round of renewals on EasyDNS. Len, couple of repeat offenders tonight. I don't know if you know that or not, but not surprising here on Access of Easy to see the usual frequent flyers. We got Google. We got Microsoft. Where do you want to start?
Well, Microsoft was sounding the horn on one, but let's talk about this Signal story. I found it to be quite fascinating. And for people who aren't aware what the heck Signal is, hopefully you are aware, it's an encrypted chat service that you could get on your phone and you could also get on your computer. It's end-to-end encryption, not like other safe, quote-unquote safe chats. This is the real deal. And it's also open source. You could analyze the code if you want. So there's a lot of pros that go along with Signal, but still there's some issues with it, at least how people are using it. And there's a way, so if you are a Signal user and you have it on your phone, you could load it up on your computer so you could have the same chat on both of your devices. The way to do that is you have to have a QR code, which you scan off your phone from your computer, and voila, your chat is popping up on there. Not your previous chat, but your existing chat and anything moving forward. So what one way these Russian hackers are trying to get access to people's Signal is they're trying to use deception and social engineering by trying to trick their targets into clicking a malicious QR code. And it's often disguised as a legitimate invitation to Signal or something along those lines. If people click it and unknowingly they allow those people that scan that code, that QR code, access to their Signal. And if they haven't linked up their Signal to a computer, they may never know that somebody is accessing all their chats moving forward. And they could even engage in new chats and they're essentially acting on behalf of you without being you. So it's just another way that you could be attacked, and people need to be aware how Signal works. And if there are QR codes, especially something that's related to Signal, you don't want to touch it unless you're scanning it yourself. You from your device to your computer, your phone to your computer, that's the only way you want to go about things. If somebody's sending you an invitation or stuff like that with Signal, run far away. That's not the way Signal operates. So just learn how it works and stay in your lane. That's all you got to do. And if you don't, well, unfortunately, all your information is going to be stolen in the process.
Yeah, man, totally agree. The QR code thing is weird for me. How often do you use QR codes, would you say? Like in general? No. I mean, you don't use them often. Like for Bitcoin transactions, I guess you probably do.
Yes.
But otherwise, like the last time I think I used a QR code was to link a Telegram account to a computer. So like, obviously you have like a Telegram account on your phone, Signal, same thing. I'm sure it's like the same setup.
It is exact same thing.
Yeah. So like the thing I don't know is why you would ever use a QR code sent to you by somebody else.
That's a good question. I think people are very trusting. They look at the QR code as a way of quickly getting to a destination, and they don't think about what it is that it really is. So yeah, I don't use it a heck of a lot. You know, even with Bitcoin transactions, to be perfectly frank, Joey, I don't tend to use it all that much. I like to do the copy and paste of the actual address. That's my preferred method. If I have that option, that's the one I will do. And another thing about it too, I just want to go into the weeds here, if you don't mind. With the Signal, you could even do a notes to self. So if I want to send something from my computer to my phone or vice versa, I could use that notes to self to do that. So if I want to send over a particular Bitcoin address, for me, I find that to be the most convenient way without relying on a third party. I'm simply relying on myself and encrypted end-to-end just for myself. So I just wanted to add that 2 cents here.
It is true. Like even when I think about the times I see QR codes, there's been a push in the last, I don't know, I want to say like 3 to 5 years now, advertisements on TV oftentimes have like a scan this QR code. When I go to sporting events, there's almost always a QR code where you can like send pictures of yourself in your fan gear, excuse me, your team gear, whatever, and get entered into contests and stuff. But like the overall message here is the same one we carry a lot of the times with the stories we do on Access of Easy. If you don't need to engage with a piece of media that you're not familiar with, whether it's in an email or on a TV screen, just don't do it. You know, whether it's on your phone or like, just don't do it. There's no point. You're not going to get the likelihood that that's going to cause you a problem is much, much greater than almost anything else you'll do on your phone. And so I just like, I can't believe this is still happening. The other thing that's weird about this is that how many people do you know that are like technologically illiterate that use Signal?
I would imagine of all the people that are on it, maybe one or two.
Not many, right? So for that to be a vulnerability is really telling. That's not great.
Signal's not really made for those particular individuals.
Yeah.
And it's for people that actually understand the technology and how to use it properly. So for those people, they're not the ones that are being subjected to this type of attack. At least I hope not. So it's working properly with respect to that.
We're going to find out. See what the follow-up is next week. If we see the story again, we'll know it wasn't as good as we thought.
And here, another thing as well, I just want to add one more thing. When you link a device to Signal, you can only link one device, if I recall correctly. So I have my phone and my computer, my existing computer, all linked up to Signal.
Can you only do one device?
Correct. So if I want to do another computer hooked up to my same Signal account, the one on my first laptop is going to get kicked out. So that's one indication. If you see something like that, you know something's amiss with your Signal account. So yeah, you're only able to link up one device in totality to Signal. At least that's what I seem to recall. So that's... I think that's a built-in fail-safe in the whole thing. So I'm trying to take a look at linked devices. I only have one.
I think I have two. I think I have my phone and two computers. Yeah.
I
mean, this is we're way into the weeds here now. But I'm pretty sure I have three devices with my Signal going at all times.
Okay, interesting. I could have sworn it was only one.
You verify your PIN, right? Every so often, like you have to push in that PIN number you give it.
And yeah, so, and it's like every month now.
Yeah, which is fine. Like, I don't mind doing that. It's not that bad, but it's interesting, right? There's all these security features, and that's a service that you'd only ever find yourself going to if you had security concerns and an understanding of, I mean, presumably an understanding of what was going on the other side of that equation. And still, you're getting, you know, these kinds of stories. It's a bit weird, I think.
I stand corrected. It's up to 5 devices. I thought it was 1.
There you go.
On mine, it's only 1 because I make sure to delete whenever I install a new OS. Yeah.
Which I mean, that's I know that because I have all my devices and I'm also linked to all your devices. I haven't told you that yet, but
there it goes. Excellent. So you can see all my chats talking crap about you behind the scenes. So just to disregard that, Joey. Let's talk about this new malware variant, XCSSet. And of all people, Microsoft are the folks that are alerting the world of this, and it's impacting macOS users. And this has been floating around since 2020, and really it's a more sophisticated set of the XCSSet, and it's been infecting something called Xcode projects. And it's also the way it's designed, it's making it harder and harder to detect because it's hiding its code. And it's including randomizing how it generates the malicious code. That's why it's making it difficult to actually find it. So it's a very sophisticated piece of device. And it stays on your computer even after you restart it. And it's what it could do if you happen to have this on your macOS and it's impacting you. It could steal your data from various apps like Safari, Notes, and Telegram. Now, considering how much people use these particular applications and how much sensitive information that they put on it, this could be really detrimental to the end user. Also, it could take screenshots. Again, if you're putting any sensitive information on there that doesn't have, your say, your password blocked out or something, that could be pretty nasty. But even if it's not, anything that's taking a screenshot, just even randomly, this could be used against you in the future. It could also encrypt files and demand ransom in the future. And as well, they're saying that this could lead to supply chain attacks in the future. So they say that if you ever get anything with related to Xcode projects, be careful what you download, inspect it thoroughly, and only download apps from trusted sources like the Mac App Store. I'm not sure if anything that ends up on there is malicious, but they do a pretty good job at screening out most of the crap, or maybe all of the crap. I'm not too sure about the all, but most likely most of it. So I'm kind of interested that why is Microsoft the one that is bringing this out? Is it they're trying to flex their muscles to show off that they are the king of the hill when it comes to cybersecurity? Or are they just trying to find a particular crack in a system for macOS? I'm wondering maybe it's one of the two or both of them. But either way, make sure your antivirus is up to date and hopefully that's enough to keep you safe.
So this is pretty rare. Like using Xcode is not something that most users do, which is fine. But there's a comment after the article that I want to read. I just had to pull it up here. Yeah, is this it right here? Yeah, it is. This is interesting. You and I talk about this sometimes, and this is a good story to mention this on. I'm going to read it verbatim, and you tell me what you think. It's from a guy named Rirare. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Probably not. I've often maintained that one thing pushing society to its breaking point is the fact that the world has become too complex for any reasonable human being to even hope to truly understand. This is a great example. Think of any application that might so much as sneeze near sensitive data on your phone or laptop and ask yourself if you've fully vetted everything down to the source code level of every dependency, every cross-linked library, and then remember that you must also know the provenance of every bit of code you've ever used to build something locally, download and install something from the web, and so on. Even for a quote-unquote simple thing like an email app, the web of trust required to know that your communications are being securely handled is beyond mind-boggling. It's a small wonder that most people just give up altogether on trying to keep track of all this. For most of us, safety comes through probability, not rigor. And the best we can do on both fronts is often illusory at best. That is spot on. No one knows what's on their phone, their computer, their device, their camera, their microphone. They have no idea. And it is true that there's this illusory feeling that you get from doing stuff, you know, through the Mac App Store, or because you bought it at a Mac or an Apple Store, or like in your case, right? Like you do a lot of Linux stuff and it's open source. It is impossible at this point. The complexity is just too great. And I think the more, you know, we talk on the show a lot about this idea that as things get more complex, the surface area for attacks does nothing but grow. It never shrinks. It never goes down. Nothing like that, right? And so, you know, when you see a story like this, it's like, yeah, it's kind of off in the weeds a bit. And like I said, you know, people don't use this Xcode thing that often, but it's the point still stands that the systems are so complex that you as a user can never know that you're safe. All you know is that hopefully you don't get destroyed if there is a vulnerability. That's really what it boils down to. And by the way, this is everywhere. It's everywhere from computers to banking, right? You never totally secure. As long as the bank gives you your money back, you don't care how secure you are. It's like this guy says, illusory. I love that word. That's a great way to describe what's going on here.
It's simply just trying to mitigate and minimize risk. That's essentially what one can do. It's very yeah. much like when you create a seed phrase for your Bitcoin wallet, and when it's done properly, the likelihood of somebody getting access to that is virtually impossible. It's not zero, but it's virtually zero, right? So it's the same thing like that. When you are able to practice good hygiene, security hygiene, you could limit your attacks. It's not going to say it's go to zero, but it's certainly going to minimize how many. And if it does happen, you probably won't give up very much, especially if you don't have a lot of sensitive information that's readily available. If you have like your own cloud server at home, for instance, and all your information is on there encrypted, as long as that thing's offline, there's nothing that could get leaked. You know, there are things people can do to mitigate all these problems, but it takes a lot of an effort. And the problem is with doing it's very cumbersome.
It's what very easy. The reward at the back end, right? Like the reward at the back end is if there's always the promise that you'll be made whole, why go through the process at all, right? This is the question I think a lot of people probably ask.
And that works really well in the fiat banking world when something happens and, you know, they could, you know, if your account is compromised.
welcome to Access to VZ, where Len never misses an opportunity to take a huge steamer on fiat banking and related endeavors.
No, but with respect to Bitcoin, though, you don't have that. If you make a mistake, there's not anybody that could roll back the ledger and say, oh, it's okay, buddy. We will make you whole. The mistake is on you're
right
you
about that.
You're done. So yep. That's why a lot of this, I try to take it very seriously, is I don't want to expose anything that I can and try to limit what is exposed. And if they do have, I'll be honest, if somebody gets access to my Google account, there's nothing on there that's going to get a lot. My Proton Mail's accounts, there's nothing on there that's going to get to me in terms of like stealing my precious Bitcoin, for instance, or my password. It's impossible. Yeah. That computer is offline for the most part. So as long as that thing is, I don't want to say what I do with it, but it's secure, the data. And people, it sucks to do these things, but I know that I sleep well at night. That's all.
Yeah.
For me, it's just.
Yeah, that's valuable. Yeah. Yep.
Now, North Korea, they're at it again. And there's a group over there known as the Kimsuki Group. Kimsuki. I like that. It almost gives me a. It reminds me of the Kim family in a way.
So it sounds like something I'd order at a hibachi restaurant.
Well, this campaign, Deep Drive, and I don't like it at all. I don't like the hashtag in it. I don't like anything with this name. It just screams, you know, like it's I just need attention. But the gist of this whole Deep Drive thing, it's a way to dupe people into downloading and executing PowerShell and .NET scripts. And they do this by using fake work logs, insurance documents, and even crypto-related files. So people are being duped in a number of different ways. And once this thing is loaded up, it gets access to the Dropbox, and they try to get information, try to extract any information that's on there. Because people put sensitive information on there, and if they could get access to it, and if there's anything that's financially sensitive, or even maybe keys to somebody's Bitcoin. People do this. They secure their keys online in these cloud-based servers, and they don't think And if this campaign is successful, which it seems to have been a few times, and they get access to somebody's sensitive financial information, or maybe their keys to their Bitcoin or altcoin wallets, well, it's game on at that point. And what are you going to do? Maybe the bank will make you whole, but with respect to Bitcoin and your altcoins, it's gone. So yeah, North Korea, they've been pretty active in the world of cyber attacks, and they continue to do it.
That's one way to put it, yeah.
It's one of their greatest imports, right? Like what export, whatever the heck it is. Either way, it's a way for them to gain currency from outside of North Korea, because they've been sanctioned to death, and it's not like they could go out there and make an agreement with any country. They don't have an ability to do that. So this is one way for them to do it. Not condoning it. It's just the reality of it, unfortunately. So I don't have anything else to add.
I have nothing to add to that story either, except that maybe just one thing. I always have one thing to add. I don't even know why I bother saying I don't. These apps, right? PowerShell and stuff. Again, very rarely you see people use those applications. And so the other thing I kind of wonder now that I'm saying it out loud, like how do you find yourself as like an average Windows user, let's say? You know, you're not equipped to understand the threat that you're being exposed to, And yet you wander into PowerShell and don't think, hey, wait a minute, what am I doing here? I've never used PowerShell before. Why am I in this app? Like, what is this user interface? It's weird that people can't make that connection when they've already kind of walked off the cliff. They're like Wile E. Coyote, right? Like they're running and nothing's underneath them, but they don't see it till it's too late.
What if the application is, say, a pirated game or something, and somebody wants to get access? They're an older teenager. They don't have a lot of money, but the new game came out. They want to get it. Oh, here, it's pirated. I could just simply get it. And it has all this stuff that really just wrecks them in the end. So I'm just giving you one example. There's a lot that they could hide within, quote unquote, legitimate software.
Yeah. I mean, like I just wanted to go back and look at the PowerShell UI. I mean, it's possible that this is not something that would pop up for you if you were having this issue, but if it did, like you would notice right away. I actually think PowerShell, when PowerShell is doing something, it pops up no matter what, I think. So I could be wrong on that, but it's weird to me that people are going this direction. They're way out of their, way over their skis. And when they see this stuff happen, they're like, oh, well, this is probably normal. I guess I'm doing something different here. But then again, maybe it's possible they don't even understand what they're looking at. They just figure it's some other, Windows adjacent application, and it's part of this other process they're going through. It's just, again, like doing this show, it's hard for me to understand sometimes the mind of the person who gets nicked by something like this, I think is what it boils down to. Maybe that's a me problem, but it's the stories. Once in a while, I just think, man, how did you fall for that? And this is, maybe not the worst one, but it's up there for me.
When's the last time you've seen the PowerShell prompt?
Geez, I don't know. It's been a long time. I pulled up the UI because I hadn't seen the UI in a long time. I just pulled it up during the show here. But like, it's command line. It just looks like command line. So like, it's when it comes up, you realize right away. You know when it used to come up? It used to come up a lot on like Windows XP machines when you were installing something. You'd get like a quick like CMD, like the command line prompt. And now I mean, I don't install a lot of stuff on my computers anymore, so I'm not 100% sure if it still does for some things, but I haven't seen it pop up on mine in a long time, which by the way, lends itself to my point. Like people would be going like, what the hell is that? Like, I've never seen that before. This thing's just executing scripts.
You like a Steam guy and stuff like that?
I use Steam. Yeah. But even that, like, Steam is like a trusted, like, mm-hmm. again, like it's, maybe it's hard for me to figure out that people are getting caught by this stuff. But for me, it's like obvious. You go, there's one website that you go to for Steam, and then the Steam app it's never penetrated. It's a fortress, right? And so if you don't get that right in the first step, maybe you wind up in this situation. But for me, it's just like, holy Christ, man. Like this is an easy one, it seems like.
Isn't Steam cloud-based? Like the software is running on a remote computer and you're just getting the backend?
No, it's actually running.
I haven't used Steam, yeah, so I don't know.
You install Steam on your computer, same as Battle.net, same as probably then, honestly, I bet you it's at least in part for security.
Okay, that's fair. I just don't use it. Yeah. All right, this Chinese programmer, Hu Leji. Let's hope I pronounce that. There's a few names I'm going to butcher in this one. It's a Chinese programmer.
Leji.
And this dude, he burned about 603 ETH, and he also donated 1950 ETH. So the total is around $7 million USD. And this was done over a bunch of transactions. Just simply burned and donated this. And some of the donations did go to WikiLeaks. So apparently this went to, I guess, a worthy cause. But what is odd, aside from burning and donating this money, is the multiple messages that were done on chain. And it was accusing something called Quande Investment and their CEOs, Feng Jin and Zhu Yuji, again, I must have butchered those two names pretty bad, of something called, they're calling brain computer weapons. The heck is this? And this guy is saying, the guy that did these on-chain messages is saying that these guys are using brain computer weapons against employees and former employees. So with the whole act of burning and donating all this ETH, gave him prominence because people were examining what's happening on chain, and then the message came up. If he wasn't able to burn and donate that much, the message may not have ever been captured on social media and would have been lost in the sauce. Either way, what the heck is this brain computer weapons? It's claims that there's mind reading tech and controlling employees' thoughts and also sensory deprivation. And through this all, they are enslaving the employees of Quandi Investment and also the former employees of Quandi Investment. Some people have too much time and money on their hands, and this guy Hu Lenji might be one of them. But either way, I find this a very odd way to spread a message, a very costly way of doing it. But by doing so, we're talking about it here. So maybe he achieved his goal. But really, what the heck's his brain computer weapons? I have no idea. I think it's just a whole bunch of malarkey, if you ask me.
Is Quandi Investments like a roach motel then? Like you just, you know, check in anytime or check out whenever you want, but you can't leave? Is that like the... I don't get that. How are they controlling for...
You can stab them with your steely mouses, but you're never going to get the heck out of there. Well, I don't understand. Like the whole process of going... This cost this guy $7 million just to get this message out there that... Right, like, he could have left a better message that had longer lasting impression. I would imagine a week or two, we're gonna forget about it. And even the people that he's claiming that are behind this brain controlling stuff, they're gonna forget about it too. This guy's gonna burn another 7 million ETH. Eventually, he's gonna run out of cash.
This is the kind of guy who, we need to get this guy. He's off his meds. We need to get this guy an unregistered firearm right away and see what happens. This is the only answer to this story. I don't understand what else we're going to... I mean, this is like pure schizo posting, isn't it? As the kids say.
How did he get access to this? Posting to me. How did he get access to all that ETH? I'd love to know.
He got into someone's PowerShell, got their wallet.
There you go. I don't know. Yeah. Anyways, let's talk about this Google thing, this Google fingerprinting. And apparently this is making life easier for advertisers out there because some new changes came into effect a couple of Sundays ago. And what it is they're allowing advertisers to potentially get information like IP addresses and device information. And they're able to create profiles for people, which could include also the screen size, language settings, time zone, browser type, battery level. And you're saying a lot of this could create a risk, a privacy risk, because they could do some tracking on individuals, like IP, for instance. That's one way to track where an individual is. But also, if you're looking at like battery level and browser type, you could identify what type of device they're using. So there's a lot of information that could potentially be passed on to advertisers. And it's all thanks to Google's new changes. And people, I guess, should look at other ways around this. So they're going to get this information if you're going to use Google products. Okay, you can understand that. So maybe use stuff that mitigates the information being used, VPN. So the IP stuff is going to be very difficult to track exactly where you're coming from. Browsers that are much more secure, use stuff like Malvad browser, maybe Firefox, Brave, something like that. Just something that provides less information. That's really the gist of it, is people need to practice better privacy. There's lots of applications out there that could help you do it. Of course, you have to work within the framework of the application itself. But if you do so, even though Google's doing this change, which absolutely sucks, it's going to make it more difficult for the advertisers to get a lot of information on you and build a profile. So the onus is on you. Do something.
Where do you come down on... the intensity that's sort of ramping up now as advertisers realize that people, even the average person, like the sort of internet pleb, is starting to become more conscious about the way that they not only browse advertising data, but the way that they think about and interact with and engage with, you know, what they would call their algo. So I know, you know, for me, and I think a lot of guys and gals my age, I don't click on certain things because I don't want to see them again. And I try not to linger on certain things because I don't want to see them again. And it's same as advertising for me, right? Like I get, my ads are pretty tightly tailored to me. You know, there's gonna be this sort of continued awareness.
Oh, we lost you. The audio's gone, Joey. Oh, no. Hang on. I'm going to just place you back now.
Hold on. Am I back?
Yeah, you are.
You sure?
Okay. Yes, I can hear
you. I don't know what happened there.
Okay. I'll just hold this thing. The thing I would say is that there's going to be a shift toward people taking more care when they engage with algorithms. Fine. So what do we expect the response from companies like Google to be that rely on advertising to maintain their business?
They're not going to bend over backwards for the user. They're always going to placate to the advertisers because they're the ones buttering their bread.
Yeah. And so when I see stories like this, you know, this idea that like they're operating, and I mean, this is from the article, they're operating in a gray zone of privacy. Like anytime the Overton window moves a bit in terms of what's acceptable, as far as making sure that people get the advertisers, I should say, get the cracks at the users that they want, it's always going to move away from what's acceptable to you today and try to be made acceptable for you tomorrow. This was, by the way, the case early on in Instagram's sort of move toward algorithmic browsing. You may not know this, but for a time, Instagram was like followers only. And I realize Instagram is not a Google product, but we're going to use it here for a second. It was like a followers only feed. So you only saw the people whom you were following, your friends, your family, whatever. And then sometime, you know, 8-9 years ago, it started to feed you stuff that you weren't following. And then it started to feed you stuff that you were browsing about and stuff that you're talking about on Facebook. And then, you know, you and I talked about how Facebook was combing messages for advertiser data on this show probably about 6 months ago, maybe a little less than that. And so, you know, Google's got this trove of data and info. And you know, don't forget, Google's also making a device. You know, like how many people use Android phones? You think Google just lets that data go by the wayside and doesn't think about ways to use it? It's never going to be in your favor, the more information we give these guys. And, you know, then there's a point coming here, and, you know, kind of a callback to the last story, the mind control thing. Like there's a point coming where you could tell me that there's a way to predict what a 13 to 18 year old will do given enough time, given enough touch points with an ad or with a, you know, sort of an algorithmic, you know, event or whatever you want to call it. I don't know what the terminology would be. And so when I see stuff like this, it's like, yeah, they're going to tightly tailor to everyone as often and as early as possible, because it makes them good consumers. And that's what they need to stay in business. And the idea that it's going to change is just wrong. And so to your point, yeah, you got to be aware of your privacy and stuff, but pretty soon that's not going to be enough. If Google's getting information about your battery percentage, about your screen size, I mean, we know that companies are taking screen size data and device data, because the ads when I watch YouTube on PlayStation are different than when I watch them on my phone, different than when I watch them on my computer.
Wait, you watch YouTube on PlayStation?
All the time. My spin bike is out by my PlayStation, and so I usually watch a video while I ride the bike in the morning. And so, yeah, like this stuff is all different, tailored to information that you are giving, whether you want to give it or not, whether you intended to give it or not. It's being taken from you. And soon enough, Len, I'd be surprised, honestly, if, like, you know, I know that like there's the Graphene OS thing for Pixel phones. You know, how long is Google going to allow people to lock down those hardware devices with other software? I can't imagine it's going to be much longer.
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if there's restrictions preventing them from doing that, because people are very creative in finding solutions to this. So they could put up these barriers, but people... Look at Apple with the jailbreaking.
Apple makes their... You can't jailbreak an iPhone anymore.
Is it... What happens when you try to do it? Is there just not simply possible?
There's no vulnerability anymore. Those things are locked up. You can't do it. The really? Jailbreak community on Reddit is dead. Yeah, it's dead. It's like graveyard.
I wasn't aware.
You have to get like a 5-6-year-old device to do it.
Wow. Okay, I stand corrected then. I have no idea.
Now, the difference, obviously, I mean, we're kind of dragging this on, but the difference, obviously, between Apple and Google is that Apple makes all their devices. Google makes none of theirs except the Pixel, right? So if they ever did want to change that, I don't know how difficult it would be, but it's interesting, right? Like everyone is giving this data, and there's, like I said, a general awareness and a general desire to not give it. And so, you know, that's gonna come to a head at some point. I don't know when that's gonna be, but I don't think it's gonna be that much longer.
Nothing else to add.
Great. God bless everyone. Go Canada. I'm going to turn that game on right now in this room on a pirated streaming link because I don't pay for cable.
Well done.
Until next week. Take care of yourselves.
Take care.